You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe in the green room, as always, with my guy, David Goss, out in the octagon, but not for much longer, Matt Doyle, who is yet again cackling at us as we wade through the snow, although he is possibly homeless, so that's a positive for those of us dwelling in New York City.
Yikes.
Doyle, how's it going?
I'm looking forward to moving into the green room. That's my backup plan. If this apartment search falls through, I'm just going to live in the studio. My wife's into it. The cats like the idea a lot. Like, it could become like a real family vibe for ETR in the future.
This is not even a bit. No. It's not even a bit. It might happen. There's a beautiful blue couch in here. I think it's probably good for one person to sleep on.
No, it can fit two in
an L
shape.
It'd be real snuggly. It'd be snuggly.
I like the idea of MLS going viral because during segments, Doyle's cats just fall out of the scaffolding and just plop down.
This is kind of, there was that house here in New York City that Major League Baseball built that they had people live in for a whole season. It's kind of like that. And it's also Simon Borg's kind of just like personal dream, which is to trap all of us in workspace and never let us leave. We'll get to that in the mailbag because somebody is out of their mind and wants Simon to be their life coach. We've got that in the mailbag, of course. Who's your coach and your life coach among MLS bosses? A bunch of mail from other folks. Of course, MLS rumors hot and heavy continue. Barco watch continues for Atlanta United. It looks like it might be close to over, although we've said that before. Some other rumors to hit through, some sales, some trades, things of that nature. But first, guys, U.S. national team, 30 players called in for the January camp. That is the Major League Soccer-centric news. We're going to hit that first. Of course, the news that has overshadowed all of that. Jonathan Gonzalez, a midfielder from Monterrey, 18 years old, just broke into the first team there, possibly the best team in Mexico, though he did not win the title in this last go-round, will play for El Tri. That's what all the reports are. So many people that we trust confirming today that that's the deal. He will follow a one-time switch to Mexico, and that was not expected news, although it had built steam in the last couple days, and we will get to that in just a little bit. First, let's get into Dave Sarakin's 30 players for this January camp. It's going to finish off against Bosnia. That's the friendly. It's mostly training. It's mostly an opportunity for these players to get together. 28 of the 30 hail from Major League Soccer. We've got 18 of the 23 clubs represented. Of course, 23 because LAFC is in the league now. It's a young group. 21 of the 30 are 24 years or younger. 15 have not yet debuted for the senior national team. And then the news as far as releases go, Dallas was like, yeah, but nah, we're not going to let you have Kellen Acosta, Jesse Gonzalez, maybe Matt Hedges. Of course, they've got that CCL round of 16 game going down in a couple weeks into February. So they decided it was more important for them to train together. Here we go. I mean, you can go find the full one on MLSsoccer.com and many other places. Dallas, Portland, Montreal, Atlanta, New York City FC, those are the 5 clubs not represented here. The highlights, though, what do you got in goalkeepers, Dave? Is there a highlight here for you, or is this just expected? Alex Bono, Bill Hamid, Cody Cropper, Zach Steffen.
I think it's a surprise that Bill Hamid's here because he's overseas, and you'd think he'd be ready, getting ready for Midland season. He's, I would assume, not going to be here this whole camp.
He was just in Latvia. Like, if you follow him on social media, he was in Latvia. So it feels like a lot of back and forth for
maybe,
Bill Hamid.
But
here,
Bono deserves it because of what he did. Zach Steffen excited a lot of people in the playoffs. And he deserves the opportunity as well. They're all young goalkeepers who have 12 to 15 years to play at the national team level. And this is, you're starting to build the pool because Tim Howard is gone, you think, and Brad Guzan's towards the end.
Yep. 4 caps in this group. All of them belong to Bill Hamid. For the defenders, Danny Acosta, RSL, Justin Glad, same team there. Nick Lima, San Jose, coming in here. At left back, you've got Justin Morrow of TSC. Eiko Parra gets a call in. Good for him. No caps in his career. Tim Parker, same deal. Matt Polster and Brandon Vincent, which Doyle is sure to love. And then Walker Zimmerman of LAFC, who's gotten a sniff. What stands out here for you, Doyle?
The fact that it's so young. Justin Morrow, he's 30. He's the oldest guy on the roster. And Ike Opara is 28. But the rest of this this defensive core, all age 20 to 24. Danny Acosta and Justin Glad are both just 20 years old. Polster really proved himself as a right back last year. Same with Brandon Vincent. I'm happy to see Nick Lima as well. A lot of talent at fullback, which has been an issue in the past. But then you look at the center backs, and Glad, Zimmerman, Opara, and Parker, these guys can move. This is a really, really mobile collection of center backs, which has been a problem for the U.S. I think really over the last 10 years or so, we just haven't had a lot of guys who can get up and down the field and get off that line and create play. So I'm happy to see that. We got, a few years to figure out which of these guys can be, move forward with, I think, Matt Miazga and John Brooks as kind of the hub for the central defensive core, in the next cycle.
I agree with Doyle, and we know that a lot of these guys may not make it to a national team, full career. But right now, when you look at it, a lot of the holes that we've been talking about for 4 or 5 years, left back, mobile center backs that can play with each other, all these different issues that the U.S. has had. I think a lot of the players in this camp bring skill sets that we haven't seen in a while, including actual left backs.
So Ike Opara is in this group, and he deserves it after a year with Sporting Kansas City in which he got MLS Defender of the Year. He earned himself a new contract, according to Ivis Glarsep, and that's what I'm hearing as well, that he is signed on again with Sporting Kansas City. This is a weird one for Ike. It's like, obviously, the injuries hurt him over and over and over and over. Where does his career with the U.S. national team have to jump off? Where are his legs?
You look at him, and obviously he doesn't have the long-term gain, but it's similar with CJ Sapong. They've not gotten the opportunity. So right now you've got gaps. You only have so many players you can call in at a young age, and Ike Opara showed that he could be a part of the best defense in the league. So you have to give him an opportunity to play with this group. He is an experienced player, even though he doesn't have international experience, so he can bring a little bit to the rest of this roster. But he's a guy that we've talked about. He was captain of the USU-23s for a reason, because he had the ability, he had the skills to change the game. He has the athleticism to be an international center back. It's probably going to be tough to see him in a World Cup because of his age, and you don't know how it's going to affect him with all those injuries that he's had over the course of his career as he ages. And as an athletic player, a player who has that ability, sometimes that goes earlier and you don't have
as
long a career.
Ike's just been unlucky. He's just been unlucky too, and that could happen again to him. Knock on wood. I hope it does not happen.
Yeah.
He's such a good player, such a good guy. I'm going to ask you, Doyle, real quick to make a bet. Choose one of these guys that we'll see in the World Cup. Who would be the one?
Whoa, stop. If the U.S. were to qualify in 2022, you would
good
see in the World
point.
Cup.
Slow roll.
Yikes,
who would be the guy, Joe?
I'll put it this way. For the start of World Cup qualifying, I think Walker Zimmerman, just because if you look at his skill set in terms of physicality and I think mentality as well, he's so close to having all of it, and he's the right age. So I think Zimmerman's the one.
Okay.
I'll say Brandon Vincent. It's a position that's short. He looked so much better this year from last year, and if he continues to improve, and he's going to be on a club that's going to play well, that I think fits what he wants to do, get forward. He's such a good crosser of the ball. He's physical enough to battle with center forwards when he has to get drawn into those. So he's the one that I'd say.
I think Walker Zimmerman's a good bet. I'm going to go Justin Glad, just on age profile alone going into 2022. I think if he can put some on, I think he has a profile to be in that group. Maybe not in the starting group, because Brooks and Miazga are really going to put up a tough fight, but we'll see. That's a long time away. In the midfield, Tyler Adams, Paul Areola, Russell Knews, both of DC United. Marky Delgado, once again a Doyle favorite. Marlon Hairston, Ian Harkes, Brooks Lennon, Christian Roldan, Kellen Rowe, Will Trapp, and Giassi Zardes listed as a midfielder here. DC United with three midfielders, Doyle. What stands out for you about this group?
I mean, the absence of Jonathan Gonzalez, not that he would have been called in anyway, because Liga MX players don't get called in, but a lot of the focus is going to be on midfield because of what happened today. I like this group. Tyler Adams, I think, is a prospect at the level of a Gonzalez or a Weston McKennie. And I think guys like Russell Knaus, Delgado, Christian Roldan, Ian Harkes, I think, is maybe a cut below that based on what we saw. But there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of ability to use the ball. But if you focus on the wingers, which I think would be Areola, Hairston, Lennon, and Zardes, they're all very linear, very north-south guys. Not a lot of, not a lot of like raw creativity there in that group. So that's a little bit of a worry. You could throw Kellen Rowe in with that group, and he's a different type of player. And I think if you look at this roster, and if you look at maybe the next 5 years of U.S. soccer, Kellen Rowe is probably much more of a central player, kind of a modern number 10 or a free eight, if you want to call him that, than he is a winger. And I hope that's where Dave Sarakin uses him.
Tyler Adams, where does he play here? Dave,
for this national team.
Because that's a question I think we're going to be asking a lot about Adams over and over. We did it to Dennis Hamlett, and he said, well, not my call. That's going to go to Jesse Marsh.
I think his role with this team is going to be similar to what it's going to be this year with the Red Bulls, which is a number eight, because you have Felipe who plays a number six. And this team, I think you're going to see Will Trapp play that role because he's probably the most experienced player in this group, and he's a guy who knows how to play that position comfortably. And so I think Tyler Adams is a guy who plays alongside a player, Felipe and Will Trapp, both guys who can pass from deep but need a little bit of help defensively that he can give, allows Tyler Adams to spread his legs, stretch his legs, get forward a little bit, get in the play. He's obviously not a number 10. I think a desire for him to be a number 6 because it's a clean position to put him in, but I don't know that that's his position just because I think he can do more. And I think he can be around the game more often.
Is this a
Let me ask you this. What do you guys think of Russell Knauss so far?
I think it's too early. I thought it was a slow start for him last year, but he also came into a team that had just installed a bunch of new parts and really didn't have much of an identity in the first place. I'm hopeful this year is when he kind of hits the ground running and gets some of those tread on the tires, so to speak, really gripping. I like him. It didn't work out for him in Germany. He's got a lot of talent, but we've said that about a lot of central midfield prospects for the U.S. over time. So now, and a lot of them at DC United, by the way. So now he comes back, and it's on, as always, it's on every young player to exert themselves to be a part of the team that can't come out of the lineup. Maybe you can go a little specific for us here, though, as to what you saw. But when it comes to just who he is, to me it looks like a number eight, box to box, maybe not the best when it comes to an attacking side of the game, but has the other attributes you'd like.
Yeah, that's what I saw. That's how he was used at DC, but with Bochum and then with the US U20s, he was much more of a number six. He was much like he's got good feet and he's very mobile, which I think maybe tricks some people into thinking he should be used as a number eight. But in this camp, I would really like to see him used as a pure defensive midfielder. Let him. We know what Will Trapp can do in that position. And a lot of it, he does a lot of great stuff in terms of spreading the field and controlling game. He's not as good at destroying the game. I think Knauss can be a lot of what Trapp is on the offensive side of the ball, with that destructive ability added as well. So I hope that's what we get to see of him.
Tyler Adams, I think all three of us would probably sit here and say good bet for 2022. Asterisk if the U.S. makes it. Who would be the other guy in here, Dave, for you that you would look at and say, hey, he's got a really good chance?
It's a tough one because I'm not completely sold on a lot of guys in this group, but I guess I have to say Roldan for similar reasons that I said Vincent. I think the level of improvement to show that he can take steps at the professional level, also versatility, so maybe that hurts him as it goes along because he doesn't lock in a position. Or at the flip side, maybe it means that he gets more playing time than a lot of these guys. If he happens to leave Seattle and go to another team, it's another reason that he can get himself on the field. So I guess that's the one I would say.
For me, from this group, it would probably be Areola. But two guys who I wanted to see, well, Areola, because I just don't believe we're super deep on the wings. And you know he's going to give an honest 90-minute, two-way effort every single time. He's a guy who is not going to win games for you with his creativity, but you put him out there and you become a better team just because of that. But two guys who I think do have that creativity who aren't on this roster would be Jonathan Lewis of NYCFC and Andrew Carlton of Atlanta United. Now, I understand why they're not here. They have combined like 500 minutes of professional experience, but I do wish that we had these two guys to look at because I think those are guys who play on the wing, or with Carlton, he might end up being more of a number 10, play on the wing and do bring that creative element that a lot of this midfield kind of lacks.
You can kind of feel how difficult that this is, especially as you begin to prognosticate with the U.S. national team. Yes, this camp, these matches matter. But ultimately, it is building up for one big shebang down the road. Now, first, of course, that's World Cup qualifying, but first, Gold Cups. But this is what we're building to, and this is why every time a camp comes in, you're going to have people saying, oh, what's the long-term future of this guy within the team? Up top, Juan Agudelo of the Revs, Dom Dwyer. Jordan Morris is here. Christian Ramirez. Yes, Dave is praying to the sky right now. Rubio Rubin, unattached. Where's he been? And then CJ Sapong fills out this forward core. I don't look at this group and think, boy, one of these guys is definitely going to be there. Maybe Jordan Morris fits that profile. Maybe Juan Agudelo at the back end of his prime. But if you're looking at 2022, I don't look at this group and say, yep, I feel really good about this guy being in the running for that.
I do appreciate your still lack of geographical knowledge.
What happened?
I mean, where was Rubio Rubin? Well, he was in a country in the world.
Well, sure. He's unattached now, though.
No, it's okay.
He was in Denmark. It's fine. In Denmark. Now he's unattached.
And Denmark's located, like, near, like, the South Arctic Sea like that, right?
Nice. Was, not anymore.
he was actually in Norway.
Well, he was in Denmark before that, Doyle, so it was somewhere around where the Vikings originally sailed.
Weeby, just so much knowledge
oozing
out of you. I agree with your statement, but one thing we have to consider is that they do have to qualify for whatever
World
Cup
they'll be. And they got to show well at the Gold Cup. They got to actually be competitive. Right. They got to get people excited about them again.
A guy like Dom Dwyer and Christian Ramirez are two guys that can be a part of that. If they come in and they can score goals and be consistent starters for this team, they might be pieces that you build around. Now, they may not start if you were to qualify for a 2022 World Cup, but they might start for you in 2020 and 2021. So those are games you're going to need to fill, and those are two guys that I think have the ability to play at this level in the correct systems. Obviously not the same system, the two of them.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Dwyer has a chance to have a big year in MLS this year. So you bring him in and you get him. You let him get to know people a little bit more.
We know Juan Agudelo has the talent. We're still waiting on some of the production on that side. Doyle, when you see this forward group, the midfield group, defenders, how do you think Dave Sarakin is going to want to play? What kind of team is he putting together here? Should we not read that far into this because it's just one game and this is mostly going to be training stuff behind closed doors?
Yeah, plus Dave Sarakin is not going to be making decisions for the U.S. national team.
And I'm certainly not saying long-term, yeah.
Yeah, I look at that forward group, and I don't see a compelling reason to play any sort of two-forward setup. It looks like a good reason to play a 4-3-3 or a 4-5-1 even. My thoughts on these guys kind of echo yours. There's a lot of talent, especially with Agudelo. You don't know how that's going to project long term. With Ramirez, if he goes, if he steps from NASL to MLS and then to U.S. national team and he keeps scoring, then that's definitely another mark in the ledger for, what the hell are we doing in terms of talent identification? Like, how would a kid from Southern California slip through the cracks to the point where he's not getting a look until he's 27. So, there are process-oriented things like that. But, looking at this group, it's pretty clear that forward is the weakest spot. Just on pure talent, I still have some Juan Agudelo stock, and I'm still waiting for it all to click with him. And look, if it clicks when he's age 25, he wouldn't be the first U.S. national team player, especially attacker, who it just takes a little while longer for it to come together. But I think it's an open question. What are we going to do at forward over the next 5 years?
This is a position that Jozy Altidore is going to be a part of this national team. Bobby Wood is as well. So you do have pieces from the national team that we all want to put in the garbage and forget about that are going to still be a part of it.
Yeah, for sure.
At other positions, there may not be. Like you talked about center back. Center back's one where we have guys that were part of what just happened that are going to continue to be a part of this national team. Forward is as well. So it's frustrating, I think, that there's no guy that you're super excited about, although Josh Sargent's probably that guy right now in the world for US
soccer
fans. Just
because it's an unknown, honestly.
No.
At the first team level? Don't
sit
here and
tell me
it's not.
But he put up historic production at the youth international level. So
did Rubio Rubin.
Yeah,
Rubio Rubin blew out his knee, and that's the way soccer works. And you can look at this list, and 50% of them might not be playing professional soccer in 3 years. That's just the reality of the way things work. But from ability and from soccer IQ, Josh Sargent is exciting for that reason.
He is. He is. I mean, this is kind of the quagmire that is U.S. soccer right now. You know, and let's just get to it right now. Let's get to Jonathan Gonzalez. He's going to file the one-time switch to L3 unless all these reports, all this insider information, everything else is false, which it doesn't appear it will be. And that's what dominated soccer Twitter, soccer conversation on this Monday. And it was understandable. It's a push-pull between U.S. national team and L3, one in which every single time, every fan, really on both sides, although more U.S. side, I would argue, gets really wrapped up in the outcome. And this was one the U.S. thought they had won. He had played more than 20 times for the U.S. youth national teams. He was part of that U-20 CONCACAF qualifying group. He was the youngest player on that team, by the way. He had just pushed into Monterrey. He had been one of the best players in the Liga MX the last season. Everybody looked at him and Weston McKinney and Christian Pulisic and all these guys and says, oh, man, up next, 2022, this is the team that we build around. These are the guys that we build around. And it now looks like it won't come to fruition. You heard on this very show back in November, Dave Sarakin talk about the decision either not to bring him or not to call him or whatever it was. And he kind of went back and forth. And what he said made sense in parts, essentially, which was don't hype a player before they need to be hyped, especially publicly. And also don't call in a guy when he should be back with his club, which at that time it was pretty clear that Jonathan Gonzalez should be with Monterrey as they embarked on what would have been a successful Copa MX final. He won that final. He said it was the highlight of his year, but he did not call it against Portugal. He said this about that to Soccer America, quote, nobody came and talked to me and let me know about that friendly. I just wasn't called in, which is a mistake, obviously, because this is a kid that you should have been communicating with 24/7 prior to that. Whether it's just to tell him you saw him play and you liked what you saw and that he's in your plans and you're thinking about him, whatever it was to keep him engaged with U.S. soccer. Now, the flip side is he's, of course, born in Santa Rosa, California. He's an American in every definition. His parents are Mexicans. They support L3. They wanted him, according to reports, to play for L3. He will now do that. Also, apparently, Dennis Te Closa and Juan Carlos Osorio wooed him very successfully. There are reports from Steve Davis that Ty Ramos and Dave Sarakin both attempted to contact him over the last few weeks, and he was invited to this January camp, which he was never going to attend, which is just kind of a misnomer. This is not a sky is falling disaster, but it's a really, really nasty gut punch for the U.S., for U.S. fans who've already been down. This is something that I just think people are going to continue to think about and talk about for a long time, Doyle, because there's not much else to talk about. It's just this right now.
Yeah, it is, and it's worth talking about. And I'm not sure how much I believe, oh, he was always going to play for Mexico. In fact, I don't really believe it that much at all. But I think it's
he said he wanted to play for the U.S.
He has, and we're hearing maybe another side of it from Thomas Rongen, who interviewed by CBS Sports. I think it was Roger Gonzalez interviewed him. Had a good article on CBSSports.com. Rongen said, I've been to his house three times in the last year. He's the chief scout for the U.S. national team. He's as American as they come. He represented our under-17s at the World Cup, our under-20 team. Not going to the World Cup ourselves, that has been tough. I knew going forward we might lose some battles. It's a big loss, obviously. He would have liked to play for the U.S., but you know what? His dad is so Mexican, and they wanted him to represent Mexico, and I knew it was a losing battle, probably. And Rogan's, he's been a part of these before. He was part of, he was part of the group that recruited Jesse Gonzalez the other way. Remember that Jesse Gonzalez, a goalkeeper for FC Dallas, switched his allegiance from Mexico to the U.S. just this summer. So you win some, you lose some. The issue I have, though, is that the process seemed broken with this. After, Bruce Arena was correctly dismissed from the U.S. national team after the loss to Trinidad and Tobago, it seems like Dave Sarakin and his staff and probably Tab Ramos as well just lost touch with Jonathan Gonzalez. The fact that they didn't call him in for the Portugal game, I'm fine with that. I'm because Monterrey had a game in the Copa MX semifinals 24 hours after that friendly against Portugal. And they said, we need him for that game. And they did. They they advanced past Club America. They went on to win the Copa MX, which was just their second time ever winning that. It was a big moment. He became a champion, and it was important. But the fact that they had that conversation without ever talking to the kid himself and opening this crack in the recruiting of him to allow Mexico to come in and really just outwork us, I cannot wrap my head around that. I cannot wrap my head around the laziness, about the sense of entitlement, about the inability to follow through. Now, that's part of it. But we also know part of it is that Mexico's going to the World Cup and we're not. And that's a huge opportunity in June. And guess what? Mexico don't have any good young defensive midfielders. They don't have any good old defensive midfielders either. If you look at their depth chart, they're almost all center backs playing out of position or more like two-way box-to-box midfielders like Herrera or Guardado or Jonathan Dos Santos. None of these guys is a six. Jonathan Gonzalez is a six. So Mexico, whether it was Teclosa or Juan Carlos Osorio, were able to go to him and say, hey, you know what? If you switch allegiance, there's playing time for you. And that's a powerful lure as well. So as with everything in this world of ours, when something goes wrong, it's almost never just one thing. It is a cascade of failures. And that's what we have right here with the U.S. national team, losing out on this really elite talent. It was a cascade of failures from the people in charge at the USF, really, since about 2011. And losing this kid, it is like the cherry on top of the crap sundae that we've been served for the last 7 years.
I don't really think I need to add much to
that. Yeah, that was a good rant. I'm in with that. Look, you know, we talked a lot about the trickle-down and the aftermath of Trinidad and Tobago, and we sat on a set and just kind of lamented, and we've done that for months now. There's always trickle-down, and if you're Jonathan Gonzalez and you were born in Santa Rosa, California, and you feel American, and you've come up with these guys on youth national teams, that has a huge draw to you. But you're also Mexican, and dual nationalities and dual identities and the ability to identify in different parts is important. And I've seen so much crap on the internet today.
Okay,
of people.
That's fine. But those people are irrelevant, and they should not be touched because they don't belong even having a voice.
Okay, but they exist.
They exist.
So
they
exist. So I'm not willing to be the one that sits here. Like, you can't just wave that stuff off. If you're one of the people out there, just stop. Let the kid have his moment. He made a decision for himself, for his family, for his career. It's a good decision.
Yeah, nothing.
It's a good decision.
Nothing that happened was anything wrong from Jonathan Gonzalez. But to Doyle's point, and this is going to move away from those people who are awful human beings who I don't want to deal with, is when he was 17, he wanted to play for the U.S. When he was 16, he wanted to play for the U.S. When he was 15, he wanted to play for the U.S. There are a lot of guys who don't know who they want to play for. And that's a different battle than this one was. And that's where that reaction from Doyle comes from and from all of us is, this is a player who wanted to be in your camp and you left an opening for the other people to come. It wasn't a 50-50 split with, you know, Jesse Gonzalez who accepted a call up from one and accepted a call from another, which is totally fair as well and is completely understanding. This was a guy who said, I'm in, and then they just went away and everyone disappeared. And this isn't a perfect fix. And like Doyle said, there's a million reasons why. But at some point, and it's been discussed over the last few weeks about a GM in U.S. soccer, not just having a president and a coach, having someone whose job is to look big picture on the soccer side of things. And it's something that people don't think should be picked out before a president's elected, which I think makes
literally zero sense. Literally what Teclosa is for Mexico.
Exactly. Someone who has a bigger picture look, who can have an interaction with players that have value, that doesn't have to deal with the day-to-day of being a coach all the time.
They can also say, look, you know what's coming down the line? I can tell you because I'm the one making those decisions. Somebody who can establish a clear identity and competitive, and both on the competitive and recruitment side, to say this is what we're going to be. This is who we are. We don't have that right now. U.S. soccer is just – it's murky, man.
Yeah.
And I don't know why you would want to sign on to it at this very moment, especially – when there's no World Cup. So the trickle-down is huge, and it's not just Jonathan Gonzalez. This is the first gut punch, but go look at MLS academies. Go look at other players like Jonathan Gonzalez that are coming up in this country that are Americans, that feel American, that want to play for the U.S. national team, and think about the decisions they're going to have to make over the next couple of years down the line.
You think we're going to lose Jonathan Klinsmann to Germany?
That's going to be a toss-up. That's going to be a toss-up. Good. He's holding back the laughs there.
One last little piece, though. and this isn't anyone's individual fault, but if you're Todd Ramos, you're the one who's been dealing with him for the last few years, and you want to say, I should be national team coach, this would have been one that you could have stepped in and said, look, I'm already doing the job. And you say he wouldn't pick up their phone calls, blah, blah, blah. You've had him in camp for 3 years. You should have a relationship. Someone needs to have a relationship with someone, with a player who is this good, who should be a centerpiece of your national team consistently, not just when he becomes good. And that means they identified talent because they called him in. Maybe they didn't think he was this good, which is another problem.
Maybe thought it was set. Maybe they thought it was good to go. We were like, we got him. He said he wanted to be with us. But when you start missing the World Cup, when opportunities start coming off the table.
Like, also, if that's the case, bring him into a full national team and put him on the field. You're not going to lock him in.
Which is basically what Klinsmann did at times. He didn't know what the heck he was doing after that.
Right. You're not going to lock him in maybe in a World Cup qualifier. So you're not going to lock him in from a one-time switch. But bring him in and put him on the field for a friendly. Or bring him in and put him on the field for a Gold Cup.
Yep. Look, it's a tough day for U.S. soccer fans. But there is always hope on the horizon. 30 names, 30 players, still living the dream with Dave Sarek, and they're working up to that Bosnia friendly. We will continue to cover that and pay attention to that. Let us know what you think of all of this. 401-206-0MLS. We're going to go to break. On the other side, Barco Watch.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMC Channel 85. We are calming down. It was hot in the green room. Yes, this Jonathan Gonzalez thing has got everybody riled up. 401-206-0MLS. That's how to get at us. Remember, next 3 months go something like this. January 11th through 17th in Orlando, the Combine. Then January camp opens. Super Draft on the 19th in Philly. Preseason begins January 22nd. CCL round of 16 is February 20th and on. And opening day, Saturday, March 3rd. The full schedule is out at MLSsoccer.com. Going down in the MLS universe today, Giovanni Savarese introduced in Portland. He also unveiled his staff. Go check out that news on MLSsoccer.com. We are planning on talking to him down in Orlando, so you can look forward to a long-form introduction to him very, very soon. Other news, Generation Adidas class was announced for this season. Mo Adams, a midfielder from Syracuse. Francis Atuene, a forward from Michigan. João Moutinho, no, not that one, defender from Akron. Emma Tuwasi, a forward from Wake Forest. Mason Toy, a forward from Indiana. And then Gordon Wild, another forward from Maryland. Seniors signed already. Thomas Hillard Arce, a center back from Stanford. John Beccaro, a forward from Wake Forest. He's also the Mac Herman Trophy winner. And then Chris Mueller from Wisconsin, who Ben Bear is probably going to celebrate for like 10 minutes once he gets on and gives his Baron tea a little bit later. By the way, he also got smoked on the voicemail, so you want to stick around for that one. Thoughts on these guys? I'll start with you, Dave. What stands out here?
You've got a couple Right to Dream Academy players again who have a lot of good ability that people are excited about, not sure if they're ready to produce right now. And then I look at the seniors, and I don't know what'll happen, but I would not be surprised if LAFC takes Hillard Arce with the first pick. It's not what people think because he doesn't have the pure ability, but I think he can be a starter. He's playing out there in California, so I think he's a guy that you could see go there. And then John Beccaro has as much pedigree as anyone coming into MLS. His dad's a Spanish national team legend, a La Liga legend as well, and he had an unbelievable career at Wake Forest.
Beccaro is maybe the most interesting player here because his skill level is so high, but his speed is so slow. You just wonder if he's going to be able to create any sort of separation enough to be a difference maker in MLS. And look, it's going to be tougher and tougher for guys to come in and take up international slots. Beccaro's, I think, talented enough to be one of those guys, but it's going to have to be the right team taking a chance on him. And that actually applies to a lot of the Generation Adidas guys as well. I mean, Gordon Wild was a high scorer 2 years ago, and he had a terrible season, as did everybody from Maryland. But he's a little undersized. He's maybe only a poacher. I don't know who is going to use an international slot on him. Same with Adewani, who I think checks a lot of boxes that you want to see in a prospect, but maybe doesn't combine well enough, and it's maybe a little bit of a tweener. Is he really a second forward? Is he a winger? So there are, I feel like there are more questions with this group than we've seen in years past, which leads me to believe, like Gathman said, Hillier Darcy, he's close to a sure thing. And if you look at teams that do well in MLS, they year after year, they find sort of domestic center backs via the draft. That's where you're able to get guys who are affordable, who tend to be durable, who are up for the physicality of the league. And I think in the past, there's been more of an emphasis on maybe drafting a generation Adidas guy because they don't hit the salary cap that hard. But once they come off that cap, they hit it like a ton of bricks. So with Hillier Darcy, if you get him on, you know, a $110,000 a year contract, that is a small cap hit, and you could lock him in at that for 4 or 5 years. So to me, he is the one who stands out as I think I would just, you know, no questions asked, I would take him number one.
More 2018 SuperDraft coverage coming your way, as well as the Combine. Dave and I will be down there along with Bobby Warshaw in Orlando, streaming the games, giving you all the coverage, some insight from the coaches, some scouts, the GMs, what's going down, not just with the SuperDraft, but with the building of their teams ahead of the openers on March 3rd, and for some teams, CCL, in late February. So stay tuned to MLSsoccer.com for all of that. Some other rumblings to watch here. Ezekiel Barco, it looks like it's going to get done, guys. this time I'm serious.
Should I make an intro that's just you making the Barco claim like week after week after
week?
Yeah,
I know. It sounds like a broken record at this point. But, okay, he skipped more preseason with Independiente, and now they're
saying – maybe he just doesn't like preseason.
I can't blame him. It doesn't seem like it'd be that fun. $15 million paid for him. That's the rumors right now. And 30% sell on. So that's a pretty hefty price, not just because of the 15, which is already – that's a pretty good fee there. But that is a big sell on clause for Independiente, Atlanta United. We'll see what happens there. If they do make that deal, to me, just the size of the fee is a huge departure from what we've seen in the past. But also, it continues this trend of MLS clubs going to get young South Americans, and it further reinforces, and we have to see this actually happen, we need to see it happen at some point, that sell-on is a big part of this strategy. Because you don't, if you're Independiente, you know this is going to happen. He's not coming to Atlanta forever. And if you're Atlanta, you're making a purchase as an asset. That's the only reason you spend $15 million. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with a lot of these young
South
Americans.
Well, one of the reasons is he's really good at soccer.
Well, I agree with that. But still, you pay $15 million.
Yeah.
That's just not part of the business practices in this league yet. Unless Uncle Arthur's out here just saying, I don't care. PJs and $15 million transfer fees for everybody. Also, reports that the Red Bulls will get Romero Gamara done, that somehow, someway, Huracan are going to figure out how to get this agent happy with that deal. So that would be another big money deal with a young Argentine player coming to MLS. Of course, Dennis Hamlet talked about that on the previous show here. David Ostad to DC United, that one got done. Remember, there was some drama around him earlier with the Whitecaps, but a second rounder in this year's draft sent from DC to the Caps, David Ostad, I presume will be their starter. Steve Clark had been the guy they were kind of pegging in that role, but probably going to be Ostad. That's a big move for them. I think he's been good for the Caps. We're a little bit surprised they moved on. Doyle, of these three that I've just kind of run through here, what stands out to you? What are you watching closely?
Are we including Barco in that?
Yeah.
No.
Are you more excited about David Ostad going to DC United or Ezekiel Barco?
Yeah, I made the trick
MLS
question there. Yeah, that's like that. That's the multiple choice question on a test. And like, if you know how to take tests, you know it's not C. Ostad.
It's like the first question of Trivia HQ when the other answers make no sense.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, obviously the Barco thing is, it would be kind of groundbreaking for MLS, and it's like the Miguel Almirón transfer, only more so. I really, really like what Atlanta United's ownership and front office are doing, because if they get this kid and then sell him on at a profit, they establish themselves as a pipeline club. And that's the next logical step for MLS to take as a league. It can't just be Atlanta. MLS shouldn't, you know, the idea that we should be competing with Serie A and the Bundesliga and the EPL and you know, even League One is nonsense. What we have to do is climb the ladder. one rung at a time. And the next rung is to be the clearinghouse for all the good Latin American talent that eventually wants to play in Europe. So it should be guys like Barco, guys like Yangel Herrera, you know, getting him without having it be a loan situation, and Jesus Medina as well. Like, getting those guys, coaching them up for 2 or 3 years or even less, and then selling them at a profit. That's the way to establish MLS within the global marketplace and to create global recognition. So Barco, this transfer, if it happens, it dwarfs anything else that I think will happen this offseason in MLS. With all apologies to the 22 other teams, this is the one.
And the David Osten move, which obviously
reverberates
throughout the stratosphere.
Which of these three are paper products?
Yeah.
Pigeons, toilet paper, I don't
exactly.
know. Sorry.
Thanks, Sweeby. Yeah. The one last piece I'd like to add to that from Doyle is when you watch European soccer, and a lot of people are going to get frustrated because they want to see guys that they, you know, watch in the Premier League, that they watch in the Bundesliga coming here, which is obviously we'd like to see them come before they're 31 or 34. If you establish yourself as a pipeline league here in the U.S. where, you know, we talk about comfortable living conditions, different setup than in South America, you also have the chance to get those guys who are on the fringe of their team but still believe that they're great players and are looking to go somewhere for a year or two to rehabilitate themselves to get sold back to a big team. Those guys have, you know, that's never really been in the conversation.
Jack Wilshere.
Okay, but like, yes.
No, I know. But like, I just said that for the troll aspect of it, but there was an element of truth as well.
And obviously, we always joke about Mario Balotelli.
Bournemouth is just, the north of England is beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. And we always joke about Mario Balotelli, but that type of guy, a guy who goes to AC Milan, even though they're not up right now and is struggling, has a big name. You look at MLS and you say, hey, Ezequiel Barco went from MLS to Valencia, and Miguel Almirón went from MLS to Arsenal. I can go there. I'm a talented player. I'll be on national television in America. I'm going to get to live this lifestyle. And then I can still end my career, quote unquote, or be where I want to be. Or
before I even hit my prime. And by the way, I just banked on this transfer fee and I made a bunch of money. And maybe, you know, my family had a great time in Atlanta and I played in front of 70,000 people and we won a championship. And oh, wow, this is a great segment of my career.
And even bigger
is to make.
Sorry, in 2023, you can look at it and say, I want to be in the 2026 World Cup for my national team. I can go to MLS and help myself get there. Sorry, Doyle.
Right, and I need to make a point. Like, this is what we're seeing from RSL. You know, they signed Brooks Lennon full on from Liverpool. Brooks Lennon is a good player. He wasn't going to be good enough for Liverpool. But they signed him full on, and they have him on, I think, a four-year contract. If in the next 4 years, they get the right offer from somebody, they are going to sell him at a profit. And Brooks Lennon does not see RSL as his forever home. He sees it as a team that is going to keep coaching him up and put him in the shop window at the same time and hopefully win some stuff as well. And they're not just doing it with Brooks Lennon. They're doing it with Alfredo Ortuño, the Spanish striker that they just signed, who's 26 years old and has from the people I've talked to in Spain, has a very good reputation there, but has just not found the right situation for him. So we're seeing a lot of this sort of reclaim your career type of these types of moves throughout MLS. And I think it is, in a way, a bigger step for MLS teams to embrace that than it is for them to just embrace outright buying the best young players in the world, which is what Atlanta's doing with Barco, and hey, more power to them there. So I think there's a lot of that. The other point I need to make is that I don't think we give our fans enough credit for being pretty sophisticated. Like, Atlanta United put 70,000 people into that stadium five times last year. Those fans weren't under the impression that this team was as good as Juventus or Borussia Dortmund or Arsenal, because I know Andrew's such a big fan. I have to mention a mid-table club from England. But they know where the team stands in the global hierarchy, and they're cool with that. They filled that stadium up. They saw really good soccer. They saw exciting young players who may, in the next 12 to 18 months, get sold to the biggest teams in the world. And I think that excites a fan base more than seeing a guy who is like, hey, 3 years ago he was playing for Inter Milan. Like, okay, well, there's room for those types of players, but there's more room and more need for these younger players who will eventually go on to do great things at the greatest clubs in the world.
To be fair,
or
not Inter Milan.
Or Arsenal.
For neither of those among the greatest clubs in the world, by the way. Let's keep it rolling here because we're running out of time. Caps flipped San Adekubi to Vålerenga in Norway, so that finally happened. They've been trying to move him for a while. Kamar Lawrence rumored to Fenerbahce. We've been hearing a lot
that,
about
that goes along with what we're saying. That's a big club. That's a big sale. That's a talented international star.
Same thing with Kyle Larin to Besiktas. Those rumors continue. We got Efren Juarez.
Ugh. Sorry.
Caps maybe right
Did I
back.
Just do that out
yeah,
loud?
I know. Well, you have it on the rundown too here. Just parentheses, ugh.
I just reacted to that without forgetting
right.
that I wrote
Correct.
That. That's how natural a reaction that yeah, is. That is not a guy that you really need to sign.
Okay. Kubo Torres rumored to maybe Veracruz. We'll see. We've talked a lot about what Houston might do without
Veracruz
him.
Veracruz are in the dumpsters right mm-hmm. now. So they'll mm-hmm. take anything.
And pay close attention to Blerim Dzmaili. There are a lot of rumors around him and about who maybe Bologna might swap back. Remember, the chairman of Bologna is, of course, the owner of the Montreal Impact, Joey Saputo. That's it from us in the second segment here. Rumors, rumors, rumors. That is basically what's going to go down until the windows close. 401-206-0MLS. Any thoughts, questions, comments, whatever, call us, text us, voicemails, emails. We'll take them all. We're going to go to the mailbag right now.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I can live a lie running for my life. I will always want you. I came in like a wrecking ball.
Back now on Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com. Andrew Wiebe, David Goss in the green room. We have shunted Matt Doyle to the side. And we brought in the King of Takes. Royalty is here. Ben Bear, the research bear, just revealed that he does not have a Barrentee ready for this show. Just revealed.
I have plenty of Barrentees just at the top of my head. It's just I don't always have them fired up and ready to go as soon as I walk in. They're just millions floating around in there.
Why are you here if not for Barrentee?
I'm here because I'm smarter than all of you people. Mm-hmm.
That's false. Ben, what's your top two non-MLS related Barrentees that you can throw at me right now?
Barrentees are strictly related to MLS.
Oh,
that's
really?
Why.
Oh, you don't spout off and claim
never,
things about the rest of the world?
No, never. You guys
also,
know me well.
I also like the numbers guy on Twitter that's like definitely 60-40, maybe 75-25. He's out here
that's
just throwing,
of Charlie Fixon
just throwing qualifiers
well.
Out there.
No.
Okay, what's your Barrentee?
No, because people throw up Barrentees in our office. We printed out a bunch of them, and then we put them up on the wall. Mm-hmm. And people threw out some EPO-related ones, and I literally just wanted to take it off the wall and throw it in the trash right away.
You could have done
those
that.
Are not allowed.
Yeah,
only MLS
that.
Ones.
That's your
For
wall.
Example, I didn't put this on Twitter or on the show, but I had one recently that Cordell Cato would be taken in the re-entry draft. Of course, I was wrong about that one. See, I have humility.
Yeah.
Even I could say when I'm wrong.
Okay,
you know?
All right. Well.
It's the beautiful thing that there's a place in the world where people are making Cordell Cato hot takes
yes,
and guarantees
yes,
still
yeah, it
in
is.
2018.
Yes, that's the world that I
give
live
us,
in.
Give
Welcome.
Us your, let's see, what is today? January 8th, guarantee. January 8th, 2018.
Well, I guess I'm not going to be on the show next week, right? Because you guys are going to be in Orlando.
We'll call you up. We'll call you up for a Barrentee.
Well, whatever.
You should call in.
We're still going to make this Super Draft related. So, you know, I'm a proud Wisconsin graduate. We have, for the first time, you know, we had A.J. Cochran. Drew Connor.
I haven't seen his diploma.
Drew Connor is in.
Just so you know.
Please. Drew Connor is in MLS, but he was a homegrown signing. A.J. Cochran, I believe, was somewhere, I think he was the 16th pick. But we finally have a legitimate, you know, top 10 pick. Guy had 20 assists. Chris Mueller, we've talked about him on the show. Even though he should be a top 5 pick, which I think Top Drawer Soccer has him right now, I believe he's going to fall out of the top 10.
Ooh.
Because
oh, wow.
he plays, you know, he's an attacking player. And I think that's not really valued in the Super Draft these days, especially when you have a player. He's a bit of a tweener, and he's not, you know, what you look for physically. But, I don't really agree with any of that, but this is what happens. And I think he's going to follow the top 10.
Okay. All right. Out of the top 10.
I think someone's going to get a steal.
Give us a quick, he's
small. He's shifty. He has great balance. And he, from what I mean, I don't watch a ton of college soccer. But from what I've seen, he's incredible on the ball. And he tries stuff.
I have a question.
He tries stuff like Clint Dempsey style. He tries stuff. It's awesome to watch.
I have a question. There's a player from Coastal Carolina named Pierre who transferred from Northeastern, which is my alumni. Mm-hmm. If he gets drafted over Mueller, do I beat you in this? Or because he transferred, it doesn't count.
That's not going to happen.
Bro, you have no idea what's
about
to happen.
Nobody,
what do you think
us,
I've been doing the past week?
None of
digging
us
in.
Have any idea what's going to happen in the Super Draft. Those goes down in Philly on January 19th. Of course, the live stream, MLSsoccer.com, YouTube. I'm a host of Bad Boy. We got people on the ground. Matt Doyle's a part of it. Bobby Warshaw's a part of it. It's all going down. Make sure you watch it. Into the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS. I believe we've got a voicemail here that Ben Bear just desperately needs to hear.
Hey, this is Ben from Massachusetts. I'm going to give Ben Bear a little advice. When you say, I'm predicting that someone will hit 28 goals, and they ask you who, you don't sit there and go, oh, I don't know who. You go, I'm telling you later. All right, work on your take defense game, son.
Ben on Ben, hot take hotline crime right there.
Dude, that's got to be the best advice I've ever gotten in my entire life.
That advice was not exactly sensical. That's not a great comeback. You can't. It's like,
it's better.
I'm not telling you. Like, I'll tell you later.
Why not? You guys would have eaten that stuff up.
Well, we wouldn't have.
Yes, you would have.
No.
Weeby, you eat up most of what Ben says, so he's
exactly
probably
that's
right.
That's not true.
Exactly.
Also,
I am the number one Ben doubter.
That's not true. That's also, it false. Probably would have been better than what you did say, which was, oh, no. So it's not worse. Yeah.
That wasn't the point of the guarantee. I say one sentence, and that's the guarantee.
Yeah, now you're inventing rules for guarantees that never existed previously. We're
Let's
getting
move
bogged
on.
Down.
Again, we make rules as we
keep
go.
Keep it rolling.
Let's
this
move on
MLS,
to
right.
The mailbag. Doug from Everett, Washington sends in a great email, mainly because I apologize for forgetting. You said that the Red Bulls upgraded in speed, blah, 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 and strength from Carlos Rivas to Sasha Kljestan, in which I questioned the bench pressing situation.
Oh, of Sasha.
Doug from Everett says, last podcast, Sasha's bench press ability. I find any doubt of his strength personally offensive. We only have to look at the recent playoff matchup between Red Bulls and TFC. In the game, we see Sasha Kljestan and Josie Altidore again in the scuffle. Josie's moving into Sasha when Sasha throws him down with a Herculean effort. Two-handed such. We know Josie's a big day, a big guy. There's no way Josie gets
there's a lot of
down.
Stuff out of whack in that text slash. I don't know what it was, but whatever. Josie, we know what Josie did when he was touched by Sasha Kljestan.
I think Josie's probably one of the
obviously
biggest.
I use the word touched.
I think Josie's one of the bigger, stronger guys in MLS.
Sasha's pure, Sasha's pure explosive power took him
down.
Yeah,
obviously. Obviously, it was just Sasha Kljestan's mass amount of strength that placed Josie
Random out
to the
note,
ground.
There is next door to my apartment, literally next door, a world's strongest man gym. Unconfirmed, I've seen Sasha Kljestan coming in and out of that gym.
That sounds unconfirmed.
It is unconfirmed.
Extremely
I just
unconfirmed.
Said it's unconfirmed.
Continue. Who are these sources you have?
Continue. Can't tell
is
you.
It Cam? Is
can't
Cam,
tell
is Cam
you.
Telling
Cannot
you these
tell
sources?
You.
Cam resource?
Jeff Henry here to take us to task on our Northeast bias now because it's not just Coastal because he's a fan of a team in Florida, which I don't think counts. So now it has to be consistently Northeast. Latest show, you guys show your New York-centric point of view. In your discussion of the Kljestan trade, you spent way more time talking about the Red Bulls perspective than Orlando City one. You even said mid-segment, oh, let's not forget City. If I had time, I'd figure out the minutes and seconds, but I'm sure it'd come out in New York Red Bull's favor. I know you guys live there, but there's more to MLS than NYC. Charlie Bohm's article on January 3rd was similarly one-sided. Charlie Bohm also getting shots on the show right now. Love it.
Also Northwest Elite, Charlie Bohm. Just kidding, Charlie.
Northeast.
Yeah, he's Texas.
Yeah.
He does.
You also said Northwest, which is false.
Did I?
Yes.
I think
my brain is just mush.
I think what happened on that day and what happened, you know, you know, when the news first started coming out, is the problem with the Orlando side is that we don't know what this team is going to look like. We have no idea. Is Kyle Larin going to be sold? Are they going to sign Jose Cuomon? Are they going to sign any other midfielders? Are they going to sign defenders? We don't know what this team is going to look like a week from now.
There's also just the straight narrative side of it, which is the Red Bulls for two straight windows, a Red Bulls team that have been a playoff team, an MLS Cup contender. That's Red Bulls fans crying in the background after I say that. They traded their captain for the second time in 2 years. I mean, there's an obvious narrative there, which is why you have Dennis Hamlet on to explain it, but I completely agree. We should have devoted more time to the Orlando side. I thought we did an okay job at that, but we will be cognizant of that in the future.
Also, how about Orlando? You know, make the playoffs or something. Have us talk about it here for a reason.
Whoa.
We talk about the Red Bulls because they won two supporter shows in the past 5 years.
This is why Ben
they were in the playoffs. They almost beat Toronto. That's why we talked about them first. I'm sorry.
Ben, are you legally allowed in Orlando currently? Is the reason you're not coming to Combine because they won't let you land?
I think, yeah, free Ben Bear in Orlando.
Frank LFC on Twitter says, excellent podcast as always. I appreciate the compliment. As long as DC United strengthen their back line and get an out-and-out striker, I think we'll get into the playoffs this year.
DC?
Yeah.
No, because you're playing the first half of the year on the road and you're going to be in a hole.
This is very early for who's going to make the playoffs and who's not.
Okay, but DC United, do you see the pathway for them to be much improved next year?
I mean, yeah, they were finished last. So you have to think that they would be improved because of...
No, much, I said.
Much improved. No, not currently.
You don't see them jumping three spots, four spots.
But no, we're talking about points, though. We're not talking about... Who cares about spots?
Well, yeah, making the playoffs is what matters.
Sure, yeah, they finished 11th.
Yeah. So,
if they finish 8th, there's not that much difference between 8th and 11th, potentially.
Look, I think there's no way they won't be improved. The investment that they made, the way that they're approaching this roster build, I think...
Time out. So, if you're going to say they're improved, I hate it when we do this. So, DC is going to be much improved,
much improved.
Who's
going
to finish last? Who's going to be dropping down? You have to give that. That's the other portion of this.
Well, if we're basing it off how the teams are currently put together, I think Philadelphia Union's a competitive squad.
I think...
competitive squad for 11?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I think you'd have to probably also throw the Impact in there.
I think
the
as well.
They'd have to be in that conversation.
Okay. Give me
Orlando City might still be in it.
Yeah.
They might still be in it because of the defensive issues that they had. 58 goals allowed last year. Yeah, I know Sasha's coming
in. Well, they signed a left back. When Jonathan Spector was healthy,
I don't think left back was the main problem.
Well, when Jonathan Spector was healthy, they were a good defensive team, though. So that could be your gamble.
Okay,
but
who's their D-mid right now? I know Bobby Warshaw.
That's a good
question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
But I don't agree with that opinion.
Look, I think from the Union, Impact, Orlando, and DC, you're probably looking at, from that group,
yeah,
probably one of the last best teams.
Sounds like
which is not groundbreaking analysis because they were the worst teams in the East last year. So.
Yeah.
Okay. I just hate when we say, oh, this team's going to be much improved, and we go through all the teams like, oh, they're going to be improved. Oh, they're going to be improved.
Which is.
Somebody has to drop. Somebody has to be.
Okay, so that's in standings, but it is actually possible because of the nature of the sport that every team could get better in MLS.
Which happens in MLS basically every season.
We're all about to get taken to task for something we have nothing to do with. Are you guys prepared?
Yes, very prepared.
Alicia Sandoval on Twitter, thoughts on the Cali Classico being left off rivalry week this year. It's the biggest game of the year. Joel Soraya, to all who hadn't yet witnessed the excessive acquisitiveness culture of our country's soccer league, welcome. They are slowly but surely watering down the Cali Classico, plain and simple.
No, I disagree with that. I love the Cali Classico. We'll continue to love the Cali Classico. Just because it didn't make the one Heineken rivalry week doesn't mean that it's being watered down. It means that the schedule didn't fall in its favor. Like, I repeat and will continue to repeat, rivalries aren't made by Major League Soccer. Rivals aren't made by this office that we work in. They're not made by us. Ultimately, they're made by the fans. So, San Jose Earthquakes fans, Galaxy fans, do you feel animosity? Do those teams feel animosity? Is it a big occasion when you play? If it is, it continues to be a rivalry, and you set the tone of that rivalry. I love the game at Stanford Stadium. It is one of the best on the MLS calendar, not just because you pack it and there's fireworks and it's a quote-unquote rivalry, because it's bonkers. It ends in ridiculous ways with Shea Salinas making BS proclamations and waving his jersey around his head, with Linhart, with Gordo, with Wando, with LD, with all Kino, all these guys. It just has such a beautiful history, and it will continue to do so. So it's not going away yet. Let's not...
Just because it's not
overboard.
A Heineken, again, just, who
it's
cares?
It's 1 week made for TV.
it's called Heineken rivalry, but
it's a great week. It's going to be fun, rivalry. But like that doesn't mean that game.
RSL-SKC
awesome
will
well.
Always be. Well, I mean,
no.
Some of the players
now
are changing.
Now
some of the players are changing.
Now you're
but
on
for
the,
those,
you're
fine.
On, you're on your own in the wilderness.
Okay,
right
fine.
Now.
From 2013 to 2016, RSL-SKC was one of the best rivalries in the league to me. That was never considered a rivalry.
Keep talking to me about
my quote hands
games
right
years past. Ben's riled up today.
I'm always riled up.
Well, we've been riled up the entire show. Yeah. Someone please mention Eric Lehigh's performance against Arsenal. Done.
Okay. Check mark.
Paul from Houston.
Yeah, I don't watch that because it's FA Cup. So no.
Paul from Houston. I just listened to the New Year's resolutions, and mine is to get Weeby some MLS underwear. I don't remember what happened on the.
Oh, said, I was wearing all MLS gear.
Said head to toe.
So I wasn't. I have not seen that product on the market, but if it does appear,
yeah,
I'm more of a boxer brief type of guy. So just throwing it out there for all the merchandisers.
Legend on Twitter, Angus McNabb. So at Extra Time Radio, Sasha Torlando and Happy Dumb Dwyer with a new deal entering what should be peak age. Does Dom win Golden Boots? Let's have his best year ever in 2018 with the Sasha assist train coming to town.
I mean, if he's put him on the spot, I'm saying no.
Yeah, best
Dom
year
Dwyer,
ever.
16,
I'll take Dom Dwyer the field.
Goals?
I'll take the field.
Is Dom Dwyer 16 goals his career high?
No, he had 22.
Yeah, 22 the 1 year he like blew up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then he had 16 the year after, I think.
He's not going to hit 22, I don't think. But yeah. I do think it's a good thing for him if Kyle Larin gets sold. I know they had some good back and forth in exchange last year, and I noticed it especially in that Atlanta game.
Namely, yeah. In just one game.
Yeah,
really.
That's what I'm saying, in one game.
In the Atlanta game.
Right. But I think he's more of a
DC United as well. They set each other up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
I think he's more of a lone guy. So but that 22 goal season is all the way back in 2014. That was peak Benny Failhaber. Sporting KC time.
Well, Sasha Kletchen's the highest chance creator in the last two years.
He is.
And you think you're bringing a guy in Josue Coleman who's also high chance creator.
Yeah. I mean, look, it could happen, but I don't think he's going to go over 22. So I'm going to take the under on 22 and then no chance on Golden Boot because I think Josef Martínez is going to win that. So that's how you
how
do it,
How much are you
going to
put down on the Josef Martínez
I will.
Thing?
What do we want to wager right
I don't know. Everyone send something in that would be a quality wager
problem
between
Josef
us
Martínez,
and Weeby about Josef Martínez for the Golden Boot.
The problem with Josef Martínez is that you don't know he's going to be there the full season.
Ooh.
That's what being a, you know, that's you take risks.
If he goes off and gets like 20 goals by July 15th, you really think he's still going to be Atlanta?
It'll be interesting, especially in a year with a World Cup, but him not playing in it, where the numbers net out that if Atlanta thinks they can get more in whatever the
January
transfer window.
Year
yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
I'm taking Josef Martínez.
So the Road Rambler sent us a message last week that we got in bits. And so the rest of it just came through because he's wherever
like
he is
a smoke
in the world.
Signal? What
yeah.
is this?
I just think when he was bouncing it off Mars through Saturn's
gotcha.
Rings towards us, it just got lost. So he had sent us a funny set of, what was it? It was Pepe and someone else to come in. So he added to this one, Dimitar Berbatov to Orlando to play with Dom Dwyer, does all the work, Berbatov finishes, and Berbatov still wears gloves in Orlando, which I thought was really funny. And
I would if Dimitar Berbatov came to MLS, that's my favorite MLS team, whatever team he signs
for.
Is
he still playing soccer?
Yes. Yeah. And like being silky smooth.
He's in like maybe his name.
No, he's
Bulgaria.
In India.
There you go. That's a good country to play in.
Goals in three games. I don't know if that's a quality.
Sign him.
How about this one? How do you guys feel about guys like Chris Aduyachim and Tsubasa Endo who aren't getting chances to develop? The money injection and influx of talent is obviously great, but one of the things I liked about the league is Americans and college guys getting chances that they wouldn't get elsewhere. Is that over? Especially a guy in Aduyachim. He clearly has talent and speed, but most likely won't get a chance. Somewhere Marvell Wynn is crying because I see a lot of similarities between Wynn and him who was unpolished.
I think what we're seeing, and it's like this is kind of the point I just made with Chris Mueller, is that these guys, which I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing at this point, I think first they really need to prove themselves within the U.S. soccer system at, like, USL. And if they show there, then they'll start getting more and more chances with MLS. We've seen this happen over the past few years that guys, college guys come in, they play, you know, 10, 15 games for USL, and then they start getting more and more chances with MLS teams. I think that's really what these guys have to look forward to, and I think that's Chris Mueller, I think that's what we're going to see next year. I think he could be like Chris Weehan did for Reno this year. I believe he led the league in assists, and now he got signed by San Jose. Probably still get minutes with USL, but now he got a shout in MLS. And I think these guys just need to – you're going to see all these guys need to prove themselves first as a professional.
Look, there's just
and
more
then they'll get a shout at
there's
MLS.
Just more investment as well. So when you look at like the Sounders signing a right back with Tam, that used to be a spot where if you're like Dylan Rimmick – this is left side – but if you're a college – outside
well,
back, you can come in. You have an opportunity to play
well,
because
Yedlin.
Right, but Yedlin a little bit different. Yedlin
no,
was the US
Yedlin was forced into the lineup. He wasn't going
Adam,
to be a starter.
Well, Adam Johansson
year.
Was supposed to play there. Then he got injured, and Yedlin
got
by the way, those
it.
Opportunities are still there. There's still you know, look, an injury can happen. You get an opportunity, but then it's on you. You get into the lineup, you either perform, or you don't stick. And so that's what it's about: is being prepared for that one moment. I just think the talent level, investment level is higher. Homegrown players are coming in. So we talk about the super draft here. Go look at MLSsoccer.com's transaction page. There have been a bevy of homegrown signings. All those guys are guys who would have gotten drafted.
Also, to jump off Ben's point, last point, Memphis just got announced. There's more USL teams out there to play for. Yeah. So there's more opportunity to do what Ben said.
All these guys, there's so many more opportunities to prove yourself in American soccer. They're just not in MLS.
Yeah.
They're in USL. Go and play. These guys are all going to come out of college, and they're all going to – you're going to see – we're going to be talking about the Super Draft all next week, and we know that maybe 15, 20 of these guys are going to get minutes in MLS next year. All the rest of them, I've been doing a retrospective from the year before Super Draft. So when I first started this, there were so many guys who watched out of soccer within a year. Last year when I did it, I'm pretty sure there's only three or four guys that didn't play soccer.
Now, last year was a
– and I'm assuming I'm going to go again and start doing this again this year.
Right.
And it's going to be maybe everyone is still playing soccer. Maybe
and last year, I think, was a weaker class, quote-unquote, than this year, especially for positions like fullback where guys get chances, like you said. Now, Ben, you were not here for the coach of your – manager of your soccer that you play under and life coach
right.
conversation. So I'm going to throw a couple fan ones out there while you think about it for another second.
Who would coach you? Wait.
And then what were the two? I listened to that before.
Okay, who's the MLS coach who you would want to play for?
Okay.
And who's the MLS coach who you would hire as your life coach?
Who you'd want to be your life coach.
Right. So think on that.
I have nothing to do with soccer. Okay. About your current life. So first, at Roldan scored to be my soccer coach. What do you guys want to guess? His
Schmetzer.
Twitter handle is at Roldan. And to be my life coach,
Schmetzer.
What do you want to guess? The man is just that good. A Chicago Fire fan says, life coach Peter Vermes, he would teach me how to flap my wings and fly away. I think that's like a diving reference, but I'm not sure. Steve Shannon, soccer coach, definitely Tata Martino. Life coach has to be Petke, with honorable mention going to PV. Mad historian.
Petke is one that we didn't really mention for life coach that we should have mentioned more of.
Yeah.
Because like when he was talking
also
about his kids.
Coach.
Remember when he talked about his kids when he was hired and he was like, this is how I want to train my boys, just be risk takers to like – see the world as their oyster.
I mean,
like, that's what you want for your life.
I know he's definitely from Long Island, moved to Salt Lake City, and just shreds the gnar on a snowboard with his son on the reg. So I'm a fan of that. some guy named
– I can't believe we just dropped that on a soccer
player. Just gets a little pow-pow every once in a while.
Yeah,
some guy named Matt Historian on Twitter tweeted us and said, life coach has to be Ben Olsen because of this. And then he sent us a link to a video of Ben Olsen skateboarding in an elf costume.
Yes, longboarding.
Yes.
And
ooh,
looking,
sorry,
yeah.
Mr. Skateboarding.
Oh, look,
expert.
If we're talking about Gnar and Pow Pow, we should
that's
probably
true.
Be specific about our skateboard.
That's true.
Just saying.
So here we go. So I think soccer coach.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with Wilmer Cabrera.
Nice.
Because it just seems like his players love him so much, and they love playing for him in such a way that I think.
Where
I
are you
gonna
play for Wilmer? Where on the field?
I'm always up top. You know that.
Okay.
So the thing about Ben is he's good in the open field. He's got speed, so he could run with those wingers.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
And he just sets them up.
You got to play on the. You got to play center forward. You're Kubo.
Yeah, he's
like
not
PKs, free kicks,
and similarly, he's not a goal scorer.
I'm definitely not a goal scorer.
He's more of a setup center
guy
forward.
At center forward.
Okay.
Okay, and then life coach. I'm either gonna have to go. So I have two. One is Bob Bradley because he just seems like an incredible human being and knows what he's doing and can speak multiple languages and is awesome.
What's Bob Bradley going to give you, the individual? What are you hoping for? What, in your meeting, your opening meeting with Bob, what are you asking for? You need what? Or is he's evaluating you as well, of course. But.
A direction, you know.
Just purpose, might you say? Purpose.
Gotta find my
I definitely wouldn't say purpose. I would say direction.
Gotta find me.
Or Jesse Marsh because, I saw him on – I mean, I know him a bit from 2014, and he's given me some pointers then. But then I saw, I think it was last year, 2 years ago, a halftime feature on him where he was growing tomatoes in his garden, and it was just delightful.
That's your future. Tomatoes in a garden. Playing center forward for Wilmer Cabrera.
Sal Cipriano on Twitter. Yo, ETR, been a while. I'm glad we got you back, though. Soccer coach would have to be Bob Bradley. Though this is purely based on his USMNT time, I like the teams that appear to be underdogs, but everyone secretly fears them, and life coach is Petke, because style, yo.
I mean, love Petke. I'm not sure style is always Petke's forte. Other than the fact that he owns everything that he does, he owns it. It feels very Mike Petke.
Yeah. I think for me, with Bob Bradley, the most exciting part of him being my life coach is we'd probably eat Egyptian food regularly. And he'd be open to it, which excites me. But I'm not sure, so I'll have to ask him that at Combine when I see him.
In the interview process.
Are you currently researching Egyptian spots in Orlando in case he says yes? And then like, oh, well, I actually have a place here if you want to go
I
and get some dinner.
That. That's a really good idea. That's a really good idea, Ben. Jeremy Darnell, soccer coach, Tata Martino. Love the way he sets his teams up. Life coach, Patrick Vieira, simply because I would be in awe of him. and do whatever he tells me to do, of course this would lead to him making me his slave if he wanted to be evil.
Yeah, that
interesting
that
twist
got
on
strange.
That one.
That got real strange.
And the big one, Brandon Wynn. I want Simon Borg to be my life coach. He'll push my boundaries. Not sure if that's good or bad.
That is a mistake. Yeah, Simon Borg will lock you in the studio and make you work all the time. He will force you to eat kale and peanut butter wrap.
Pushes your boundaries. All of those are pushing your boundaries.
That's true. That's true. You don't know what you're asking
this
for.
This is all too real.
You don't know what you're
sometimes
asking for.
Sometimes you think that everyone has an opinion on something because it's the right opinion, and then Simon will say something that you didn't even consider, but you can't refute it because it doesn't even make sense to you.
Exactly.
That's when Simon pushes your boundaries.
Yep, exactly.
Because he expands your mind to defeat him.
That's
yeah,
what this
because,
whole show's
because
been
he,
about.
Yeah, he just thinks of something that you wouldn't, like, we'd have, we were in arguments, and then he would just, yeah, he just says something that
just curveball.
Is completely outside of the argument, but is somewhat related to the argument, yeah. And could be construed in that way.
Like, think about this. Did Jonathan Gonzalez pick Mexico because he watched the 2015 Asian Cup? And that would be the whole thing.
And that would be it. That would be one of his bits.
And they're like, oh, but actually at the Asian Cup, this happened. So there is some sense there. By the way, John Densa, who's been blowing us up 24/7 about this New York City FC CONCACAF Champions League.
He wasn't happy.
Yeah, he's like had an hourly countdown on this thing.
He is going to get some not great news.
This is not the news he wanted to get. CONCACAF clarified NYCFC has not been awarded that spot in the 2019 CCL. That's because, as we have reported and talked about, that's going to go to the highest aggregate point total at the end of the 2017-2018 seasons, regular seasons combined that don't qualify from the other
U.S.
NYC's
U.S. clubs only.
So NYC's in first right now.
Correct.
They're in the...
Yep. Yeah.
I guarantee there will be a page on MLSsoccer.com shortly that will be keeping track of this.
Boom.
And to finish the show, Tyson wants to let you guys know that I'm right, so therefore he gets on the show. Benny, you can get center backs on the cheap in the draft and elsewhere. Effective creators are harder to find. Boom.
Talked to some people who saw that clip who might be in rooms that trades are actually made. They said I was for sure right. Unconfirmed
Wait,
sources.
What are we talking about?
You'll get your opinion.
Yes. So, if SKC was going to break apart this core of their team, slowly
Benny or
Graham Zusi or Roger Espinosa.
Correct.
I think those are the four,
market
right?
On the trade market.
I don't think like any. Well, I
who would have the
me
highest?
Me and Gus actually talked about this. I think on Friday
who,
night or Saturday.
Who would
night.
Have the highest?
I mean, I think they all have
just
pretty low value
oh
in the market.
Oh, my God. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in
Benny wow. probably would have the highest to me.
Boom.
False. Ben Bear said it. That means it's false.
And that's
for
our
listening.
Show, guys.
401-206-0 MLS. Let us know what you think about the Barco stuff, about U.S. national team, and, of course, Jonathan Gonzalez. Should be a pretty fiery mailbag coming up on Thursday. We'll see you then.